Hello, denim heads, and welcome to your 30th hangout with the Sons of Selvage, as old as me now, a podcast where a group of friends get together to talk about denim and related interests. We've got a special host for this episode. It is me. It is Tom, your Lord and Savior of denim. This episode, we'll cover the following, our current interests. It's been a while, so there should be at least one or two each, some news, some our discussion topic, which for this episode is going to be the State of the Union, aka what have we all been up to since our hiatus, since episode 29, and there'll be a section at the end for Q&A. So do make sure you subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast content from, whether that's YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Google, or Stitcher. Check us out on Instagram as well, at Sons of Selvage Podcast. No, we can't make that any shorter. Do give us a shout with any questions, or if you'd like to join our Discord server, which is always popping off with some denim questions.
Cool.
How was that?
Can we just edit that one in rather than nailed it first time?
It's already recording.
Yeah.
There we go.
Hey, yeah.
Slicing.
Yeah, we got that bad boy on film already.
Oh.
Well, that's gonna be edited.
Oh, we're still recording. Okay, I thought we'd
Yeah.
Why don't you just edit Tom's introduction to the beginning and then just start with?
Yeah.
That's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah, no one said the safety word, so I didn't stop recording.
Safety word.
There is no safety.
No, acid wash. That's the safety word.
Lovely. I did iron my jeans the other day. Controversial.
Why did you iron your jeans?
Because I left them on the floor for a long time and they were like really crumpled, and I was like, they don't really look office appropriate. Look like I've been tussled in a bush.
We definitely don't want those unexpected creases to potentially settle into place. The next thing you know, you've got like honeycombs where your stacks are supposed to be. Exactly. And oh my God.
Just cause all kinds of chaos.
Or.
Controversial, I know, but I want to get my cuffs in.
If you jump in the ocean, I think it might actually remove wrinkles from your jeans, but only if you then go home and wash the sea salt out of the jeans by sitting in a cold bathtub.
Yeah.
And then you iron them.
It will just remove friends from your life, really. People just.
Any remaining ones, though.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, man, after some 21 ounce denim, both my little friends felt like they weren't there anymore.
Shriveled.
Yeah, seriously. And blue.
Well, like the first pair of wore denim jeans I got, it actually did chafe my knob slightly. I was like, fucking hell. I don't know why I'm still in this. Maybe that's the reason why.
Oh, my God.
I definitely got my dick in a zipper one time back when I used to wear like diesel jeans.
Are you that guy who sent an email to Levi's when they started using zip flyers? It's like, I got my penis stuck in there.
It's like no, but it can't happen, man. Like, you think it's in the garage door and in your boxer briefs and like you kind of.
Why was your penis in the garage door?
No, that's what you call the little pee hole in your boxer briefs. That's the garage door.
Oh, not the actual garage door.
Now, that'd be a garage door.
Can I come park my car in your garage?
I don't know what else you call the pee flap in a pair of underwear. Just a pee flap? Pee portal? Penis oculus? I mean, like, what else?
Penis portal. Whoop, whoop, whoop. That's the way it sounds.
Mushroom dispenser. Oh, shit. I guess, should we do intros?
Yeah.
Are we going to do intros about Andy? There's going to be a lot of editing for you in this one, David.
Yeah, I think we just roll, and when he gets in, he gets in.
Okay.
We can get him to do an intro when he turns up, and then you can like whack it in.
If I can be bothered. But, but yes, you yes, we potentially, can do. Like right, maybe right at the end, so it's easier to find it. But yeah, yeah, we can.
Well, you've got a lot of editing to do in this one.
It's gonna be painful.
What's that? So here today we have the usual gang. So there's me, who's gonna cause chaos today.
What's your name for those that aren't watching us on YouTube?
Yeah, of course. So for those who have not listened to any of our 29
people, good point.
Name is Tom, as you can tell from my deep
manly voice,
ASMR voice. My Instagram handle is at Tom Jitsu. That will never change. Don't ask me to.
Are you going to say what you're wearing?
I've got to do that, haven't I? Oh God, see, it's a total shambles on David, but we'll get there. Today, which I'll talk about in my interests and everything later, a Velvachine 2-pack tee, jeans from this really small brand, and that joke won't get old no matter how many episodes we do, United Overalls ED2 jeans, and a very nice new belt from a small maker called Ernest Walker Limited. And nothing on my feet. They're barking. How about you, David?
Yeah, hey everybody, David. Taking a bit of a breather from hosting today. So thank you, Tom, for jumping in. I'm currently wearing, mostly just because I happened to change clothes when I got home. It wasn't planned, but I'm wearing sort of head-to-toe RGT. Weirdly, so I've got an RGT work denim shirt, and then I'm rocking some of their new safari shorts that I picked up this summer. So it's basically their indigo black denim with kind of safari style pockets and an elasticated waist for that little bit of extra stretch if you had one pint too many.
If anyone from Rogue Territory is listening, David would love to do a collaboration collection that's all neon. Or black?
There might be a brand that's already in the developmental stage that will largely be designing their garments around the colors indigo, black, and maybe a bit of neon lime.
Did you just yourself?
No, just because I haven't actually made any samples yet, but someday.
Is this like an episode exclusive? Exclusive news?
It really depends. It depends on how effective I am at like not spending my time painting Warhammer miniatures and instead using my time cutting samples and making garments and all that stuff.
That wouldn't happen.
But I made my pattern. I made my pattern for my secret cool Western concept. So
lovely.
Well done.
Sounds only took me a year. That's me.
Lex, how about you?
We normally do it alphabetically, don't we? That's throwing me off.
All right. You know, just make it fresh.
Just wild, Tom. All right. Hey, guys. Lex here. And today for the episode, I've got a Japan Blue chore coat, a nudie Hawaiian shirt, and I've got some shorts made by a small denim brand called Field Denim Workshop. You may have heard of them. Oh, funny joke that Tom makes every week. Yeah, that's about me.
Did I hear you correctly? You said Field Denim Workshop, i.e. your own brand?
Yeah, my old brand. Yeah.
Good man. Very cool.
Lex, do you have your own brand? Do you a lecturer as well? No, I'm joking.
Yeah. Don't sell anything, though. Just make stuff. Make stuff myself. Refuse to sell it to anyone else. I do occasionally get people on Instagram ask me to buy stuff, and I always refuse. I'm the worst businessman ever.
Yeah, you need to work on that, Lex.
I think you're what the British call an enthusiast.
Yes. Yeah. Or an anorak.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
What is it? A sheddy or something like that? Is that name for a hobbyist? An old name? It'd be that current stuff.
I thought you were saying anorak in the sense of like, Lex, would you make me an anorak? But that's actually a noun applied to someone who's a hobbyist.
Yeah. You can say someone, he's a bit of an anorak, like a geek kind of thing.
That's so weird. Like, what's the contextual relevance of that?
Train spotting. So yeah. People really into trains would be outside in the rain with an anorak on, you know, with their binoculars looking at trains. I mean, this is like, you know, back in, you know, 70s, 80s, stuff like that.
Back when it used to rain?
Back when people were interested in train spotting, I guess.
I think it'd be a really fun hobby to start going spotter spotting. So going around to all the places where train spotters hang out and taking photographs of the train spotters or the plane spotters.
Oh, yeah. We love driving past Biggin Hill Airport, and there's the mate goes outside, and there'll be people at the fences, like, yeah, watch him. There's not even that
maybe
much
Biggin Hill. I've got an idea for a hangout or like an event. Maybe we should go to a particular place in London where we think we're going to have very good coverage of raw denim heads and do arcuate spotting.
Ooh. That, yeah. You mean looking at guys' asses, you mean?
We could do like a little bingo sheet.
We can like really do it camp and everything. It'll be great.
Give binoculars to everyone. And then sign people up to our group when they walk past.
Oh my gosh. Did anyone ever watch the Chappelle show back in the day?
No.
Dave Chappelle?
Too young.
Clips.
I'll have to try and find it offline and send it to you guys. But they did a sketch called Great New York Boobs, where like Dave Chappelle kind of was dressed up sort of like a white news reporter. He'd go around to him and be like, I have to tell you, you have a great pair of New York boobs, and like give these women awards, like just random women on the streets of New York. And it was very funny. But anyways,
maybe we should do that. Yeah. For denim, hunt down people with sick fades. That'd be good. Ilya, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi guys. My name is Ilya, known as Ilcut on Instagram. Today I'm wearing a 316 pocket tee in white and some Buzz Rixon fatigue cut off shorts. Nothing on the feet, and yeah, keeping it simple and fresh.
We're all very very footless, footwearless. Yeah, if you follow menswear and don't know earlier, then shame on you. So does anyone want to kick us off for current interests? Anyone dying?
I've got one, maybe. In the spirit of Ilya's audiobook focus, I recently did a bit of a road trip from Texas up to Colorado to see some friends and family and stuff, and managed to listen to Matthew McConaughey's audiobook, Green Lights. Oh. And I say it that way because in the audiobook, he drops the term green lights quite often, and he goes, green lights, in that kind of Matthew McConaughey, you know, cool guy voice. So it kind of gets imprinted in your head by the end of the book. But it was really interesting because at first I was like, yeah, he's from Austin, Texas. That's my hometown. That's kind of cool. But like, don't really care to hear about how he became famous in, you know, Dazed and Confused or whatever, or like all of his rom-com stuff. But interestingly, the audiobook was number one, amazingly well narrated. Like, he obviously read it himself, and like the guy's a real character, like more so than you think just watching his movies. Like, very, very good narrator and storyteller, very dynamic. But then also, apparently for most of his life, he's just kind of written down anecdotes, insights, thoughts, facts. And so he's just sort of his whole life been a bit of a personal journalist, just writing down like, this is interesting. And so the whole book is kind of this concept of green lights, which is sort of this idea of things that move you forward versus red lights, you know, that stop you, or yellow lights that slow you down. The red lights even also being things that like set you back. So green lights are things that move you forward. And he's just sort of from childhood to his current age, kind of reflecting on these interesting insights he's picked up along the way. And he's got these little, what he calls bumper stickers, which are kind of like one-liner anecdotes, or like, you know, insights he's kind of picked up along the way that are interesting. And then also, bumper stickers, anecdotes. There's one other kind of mechanism he uses throughout the book to kind of like throw in little factoids, but it's kind of a half autobiography, half like, I wouldn't say self-help, but just like book of insights and interesting findings and learnings. Super, super, I loved it start to finish. I was just like really, really captivated by it. And I normally don't do nonfiction, nor audiobooks in general. But it was like a 5-star in my book. I actually went and bought it today on Kindle. They've gotten the Kindle store for $1 today. just to be able to go back and reference some of the stuff that I read about, like saving some of the bumper stickers and whatever else.
Sounds really cool. I feel like if I'd done that, though, I don't think most bookstores would be able to stock it if I had bumper sticker quotes. Because it mostly talk about asses in jeans.
What was more like kind of just one-liners. Let's call it like insightful one-liners. So it's like, don't pour your beer if you're getting chased by a steer, or, you know, just whatever kind of like random lingo sort of, there's a term for this, not anecdotes, like turns of phrase, you know, sort of just interesting findings along the way.
Like idioms.
Idioms, thank you. That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
Mine would be, if your ass is flat, don't talk back.
Why?
It's a good rule to live by. More people should take into account. And I think it would, like, cut out a lot of politicians, you know, because they're all like flat-assed. And I don't respect that. I don't at all.
He's saying they should do some more squats before they should talk back.
Exactly. Or just not be white and inbred.
Another idiom could be windows are not made for podcasts.
Yeah.
We still have no Andy.
Right. We'll like edit Andy in as like a little stick man or something. Hi, I'm Andy. I used to be in the army and I work out.
Hey Andy. What are you wearing today, Andy?
I'm wearing something that can't fit over my thick thighs. And I always struggle from doing all the squats. See, Andy has a good ass, so
so he can talk back to you.
All day long.
Are you imitating his accent as well just now?
No, I don't know what that voice was. It wasn't Andy's at all. He's our special guest, Andy Tom, who has this voice apparently.
I'll chime in with another audiobook that I've been reading or listening to, and that's Rakim's Sweat the Technique, which I think came out a couple of years ago, but yeah, I just thought it'd be quite interesting to listen to kind of his insights on how he kind of broke into the music business and how he was, you know, recording albums at that time. He was quite young. He was 17 years old, and he was quite pivotal in hip hop in terms of emceeing, because prior to him, everybody was kind of shouting, or when they were rapping, it was kind of more scream heavy. So if you think like LL Cool J, Run DMC, it was that kind of style, and Rakim kind of came in and was very laid back, and yeah, that kind of brought a whole new era in terms of emceeing. And he highlights as one of the chapters when he went and recorded with Marley Marl, and Marley Marl just kept asking him to, you know, bring some more energy, and didn't really understand what Rakim was trying to, you know, bring to the table, and it was only 6 months later that, you know, Marley Marl actually kind of said, I kind of recognize what you were doing back then now, and you know, appreciated that. But likewise there's quite a lot of anecdotes and things that he shares throughout his career, and just how to approach certain things, and especially his approach and on the music business, career-wise, and just family and stuff like that. So yeah, it's quite again, an interesting listen. I'm nearing the end of it. Yeah, it's him narrating it as well, and he's got this really authoritative voice, and again, very laid back. So yeah, it's that's been really enjoyable.
What's the 18th letter in the book?
R. and that's and in turn, sorry, Tom. And in turn, that's kind of made me go back and listen to his albums, and both solo and with Eric B. But it's quite interesting because I didn't realize that he produced a lot of the albums himself, and Eric B was the DJ, but not necessarily doing any of the production. He was more kind of doing his scratches and DJing, and I think he was also quite more on the business side of the relationship than Rakim was himself.
Rakim's definitely got like a really cool voice when he raps.
Oh yeah,
yeah, he just sounds cool as shit.
Yeah, and he was also quite pivotal in terms of the way he would structure his rhymes. Whereas before it was quite simplistic, and you know, AB rhymes, he would have like monosyllable kind of lyrics and on topics, and you know, like the rhyming scheme was just a lot more complex, and you know, people like Eminem kind of and Nas elevated that, but it kind of, he was one of the first to kind of start that alongside Cool G Rap.
Yeah, he definitely raised the bar on like lyrical complexity and like flow, and kind of like sort of laid the groundwork to a degree for like the intellectual hip hop kind of backpacker hip hop movement.
Well, definitely. I mean, he was, you know, you had like Public Enemy, who was kind of conscious and doing those kind of things. But yeah, I think he definitely had a lot of influence on, as you say, the backpacker rack and that rap and the indie scene for sure. Yeah.
Very cool.
How about you, Tom?
Not a lot with me. Been very busy with things happening in life. Finished the latest series of Wheel of Time. That's quite enjoyable.
I actually really liked the first season.
Yeah. Second series is really good. It's getting, because I found when I originally read the books, the very first Wheel of Time book, it's very like cookie cutter Tolkien, you know, all four friends on an adventure and a wizard, this time it's a woman, comes, and there's a warrior with the wizard. And then, you know, their village gets attacked and they have to leave their home. So the first book is like a little bit of a struggle to get through. And I found his writing style a little bit long. But then once the story kind of branches off from that, and you know, you get all the different kind of character threads happening at different sides of the continent, and you know, this, you know, race of people are invading, you know, on the coast, and you've got this war happening over there, and this character's like got a mythological item that's given him powers, and then you've got the main character who, you know, is like a reborn person, and there's people, you know, it that's what kind of the TV series is starting to get to, which is good. Maybe the first series was a tiny bit confusing where the characters hadn't quite set in yet, but they're getting there, and I think it's good. The only thing I don't kind of find a little bit like wouldn't be my choice is it's a very colorful world that they've depicted in the Wheel of Time series, and you know, there's lots of Far Eastern influence, lots of like Persian rugs and Islamic world kind of architecture and things like that. But in the books, kind of the current timeline is described as like all not as advanced as kind of the previous age and things like that. That I'm like, so it could be a little bit darker, a little bit grittier. You know, all the actors and actresses have like perfect makeup and perfect hair. Doesn't make it as believable as like, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where, you know, they're a bit dirty, a bit grimy. They feel like they live in the world more. And that's sometimes what annoys me with series that, you know, have like these perfect characters and they don't feel lived in the world. Well, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy done that a lot better, I think.
I would argue, though, that they very clearly targeted the TV show at kind of almost like a young adults kind of teeny-ish vibe, right? Like the way they kind of portrayed the characters, yeah, and like the intro and outro scenes, stuff like that. Like, it's definitely they were trying to kind of like appeal to like a more of a youthful audience with the show than say, yeah, they might be with like the new Lord of the Rings series that Prime is also working on, right? It's clearly like Wheel of Time's like this is targeted at like teens and like 20-year-olds or something. But I still thought it was good though.
Yeah, and it, you know, I do appreciate that. You know, they've probably made the conscious decision of not making it look like a kind of medieval, dark fantasy that Lord of the Rings kind of traditionally was, you know, with very Western, or he's got a knight sword and he looks, you know, what would be kind of medievalish. So, yeah, no, I can see kind of both sides, but I'm still enjoying it. Good series. Music-wise, Gaslight Anthem have just released, or are releasing a new album and released new songs. They've got a song with old Bruce Springsteen on, which is quite good. So thoroughly enjoying that and looking forward to the whole album coming out. There's a new album by the Menzingers that's coming out October 12th as well. So they've released a couple of songs from that. So general kind of punk rock, folk rock stuff that I'm usually into. But apart from that, just getting ready for a baby to come. So
nothing major then.
No, you know, this and that.
No big changes.
It's just another weekend, really, isn't it? Yeah.
Till the punani.
Yeah, thoroughly looking forward to the punani. No, poo.
It's like that's something else, buddy.
Punami.
I thought David said punani as well, so.
No, punami.
Yeah, due on the 1st of October. Will be induced by latest 5th. So, yeah, just looking forward to paternity leave, which I get a whopping 12 weeks. Can't wait for that. Thank you, Octopus Electric Vehicles. Shame. I don't know if I'm allowed to say where I
was. They make cars with tentacles on them and stuff?
Yeah, they're all bright pink. and work underwater as well. So yeah, that's pretty much it for me. A lot of Warhammer and a lot of painting. I think I will be downloading Starfield when the baby comes, so I've got kind of a time kill during it, so looking forward to that. Looks like a good game so far. Not heard anything bad. So just kind of a classic Bethesda open world, but in space with some good shooting combat.
I did see one or two reviews saying that it was like overly complex for what it is. Like they're saying that sort of similar complexity to Baldur's Gate, but like much less done with that complexity and more that it's just kind of there almost like for complexity's sake. But obviously I've not played either game, so I can't vouch for that. But they were saying this like in Baldur's Gate, there's all this nuance, but you can understand why each little piece of it was there. Whereas almost like maybe some of the stuff in Starfield was there more from the sake of like just tedium.
Yeah, I've seen a few videos where there's like you've got to go through quite a lot of screens to go from like, oh, the galaxy map to the solar system map and then to like the planet map and information. And then you fly in space into the planet and then there's a loading screen going from, and it's like they could have cut a few things out. Then I've seen a few people been like, oh, I can kind of understand why, because if you cut a few things out, then, you know, it makes that kind of journey from the big picture to the small picture doesn't make sense. It's classic Bethesda that, you know, they probably could have done it in a better way. Because, you know, look at Skyrim, they released it like 10 times and there's still things wrong with it. Yeah, it's one of those things where you just got to mod it on PC. Which is what I'll do.
Mate, I play DayZ and it is one of the jankiest games ever made. And every time they release an update, they make it worse. So like the new update, people have pointed out loads of errors. However, we can now wear bum bags.
Yay.
Yay.
And in case we can't edit Andy into the intro, Andy's camera couldn't work, still doesn't work. But we did have your voice double in for a while on the episode. It's absolutely fine. You're all
accent was spot on.
No one will notice.
Yeah.
It looks like I might have to do. Oh, hello. Mal, I just found it. A driver. So it looks like either the driver for my webcam has been removed, or I might potentially have to do a full reset of my computer.
I love that this is still a thing in 2023.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck computers.
How long has Windows been doing software? Like, we're only on USD 2.0, aren't we? Why is it this one?
But it's all right. Elon Musk will make sure we can have lightning drives in our butt, so it's all good.
Andy, do you want to speak about any current interests?
I thought I covered it pretty well.
Did you? Dead Northern, drinking stuff.
That's pretty much it.
That actually sounds like it.
I threw a kettlebell once. It was good.
Yeah. Oh my God, you're like imitating Tom imitating you.
I can't wait to listen. Kate, what have I been listening to? I've been listening to a few things recently that are really good. So I just picked up Oxbow's new album, Love's Holiday. Oxbow are a noise rock band from, I think they're from San Francisco. The lead singer, Eugene Robinson, is this like kind of proper, super interesting individual. He grew up in the New York punk and hardcore scene, started in a band called Whipping Boy. He's been a cage fighter. He's been a journalist for like loads of different magazines. He was the editor-in-chief of Aussie, which was a very weird news website that basically was some weird passion project of some dude, and his stories of working there are amazing. He's done the new album with the band. It's gone really bluesy, and it's a lot more chilled than some of the other records they've done, but it's super interesting to listen to. I've been really enjoying that. And then on the other kind of side of the spectrum, I picked up the EP Unpleasant Living by the Baltimore hardcore band End It, who are absolutely phenomenal. One of the best things I've heard recently. It's literally six tracks long. It's like it's less than 10 minutes long. It's not even 8 minutes, and it is just so invigorating to listen to. So cool. It just makes you want to go and like get in a pit and spin kick someone in the face, which I won't be able to do anyway because my joints don't allow that anymore. But like it's a proper good wake up call if you're feeling a bit groggy. Just put that on and you'll be good to go. Highly recommend.
Yeah, speaking of noise rock, I got to see Big Brave on the weekend this past.
I'm so jealous.
Oh dude, they're great, man. Like I highly recommend if they come back, they're worth seeing. They played the full album of Natura Mort, like Dead Nature. Yeah. Awesome.
Oh man. I'm good. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, because I was wanting to go to Damnation Festival in November for my birthday, but the hotels in Manchester have cottoned on that there's going to be like 6,000 metal fans turning up. And so all the hotel prices have shot up for this year because they didn't twig last year. So it's going to cost like £500 for two nights up in Manchester. It's just mad. But next month, Cult of Luna are running Beyond the Redshift in London, which is their like mini one-day festival with all that loads of bands they like. So there's kind of some progressive stuff, some noise, post-metal. Napalm Death are playing. It's going to be phenomenal. I'm just trying to see if I can get all the tickets and see if anyone else is going to go, because I kind of hate being the lonely guy at the gig.
Well, I thought when you were telling the story about the metalheads in Manchester that you were going to say that all the hotels started installing metal detectors.
No battle jackets allowed.
Yeah, it'd be cool. Actually, I just discovered like last week, and I rediscovered this every year, and I forget every year, that there's this festival in Birmingham called
Supersonic. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's all like basically Stuart McConey's Freak Zone turned into a festival. So also sounds really similar to the one I went to this summer in Austin, Oblivion Access, you know, kind of noise, metal, psychedelic, experimental shit. And I'm bummed that I didn't know, I keep forgetting that this festival exists every year and missing it every year. Yes.
Yes. Sorry, I might have to do another quick restart just to see if I can get this driver working. I'll be back shortly.
Tom will carry on for you. So.
Yeah, it's probably fine. Oh, I painted some more plastic soldiers as well, and it was dead good.
Yeah.
Right, back shortly.
What about you, Lex?
Good segue. All right. So yeah, again, so I mean, much like Tom, I've been kind of pretty busy with life, so not that
much. Are you
much.
Having a baby? Oh, okay.
No, we've been doing up a house, so more paint, less feces.
Equally stressful.
Yeah, not as stressful as baby. So we've moved in, whilst the house has been done, we've moved in with friends who've got a toddler, and from the short time we've been living with a toddler, I can tell you that living with toddlers is harder than doing up a house. So Tom, something you got, I'm sure Illy will agree. Tom, that's what you got to look forward to.
Can't wait. No, I
can't. But what was it going to, so I just put something in the chat box for you there, just to flick through whilst I chat. You know, when you get bored on social media and you see these kind of crappy, 35 fashion things you should or shouldn't do or whatever. So this was one that popped up.
Oh my God. Please tell me you made that. Please tell me you actually created that.
No. I found this one and it's just no idea what the website's called. How far down have you got, David?
I think it just dropped me directly on the most important image.
Oh, good. It opened up at the page a bit. So you'd have to, I was going to say you need to flick down about 12 down.
Page 15. Oh, I've got 200 tabs open.
Anyway,
for work.
which one are we looking at?
If it's not opened you where it's opened David, you need to scroll down about 12 or 13 fashion mistakes into this list of crap fashion mistakes. I'll tell you, I'll whilst we're waiting for you guys to get down to the particular fashion mistakes, we've got what have we got here? Wearing tech errors. Oh, hair products, yeah, that's the one.
Still loading for me. Give me 2 seconds. It's refreshing.
Yeah, let me guess, the image isn't loading, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's the world's worst website, this thing, by the way.
I think we're supposed to post this on Instagram.
So those listening, David will put this on the Instagram because I realise this is not very friendly. Can we share screens in Skype?
you should be able to share
the screen.
Go for it. Oh, fuck, that's so funny.
Oh, I've scrolled to the wrong bit. Some of the shit fashion mistakes in here are, there's one about cultural appropriation, matching socks, getting the right arm length on your shirt. That's an important one. Actually, Ilya, I've had to shorten a few sleeves for you over the years. Shorts need to be the right length. I agree on that. You don't want them going over your knees. No slogans. Oh. No V-neck t-shirts. Yeah, no, I disagree with some of this. Where are we getting?
Don't open on your phone, by the way. Make sure you look at it on the desktop.
But then it gets to hair products. Oh yeah, it doesn't open on the phone. That's what it doesn't open on the phone, which is why I shared this. So share screen.
Oh, that plunging neckline on that.
Yeah, that's like one of the only images I can see.
All right, I'm just going to paste a screenshot in.
I don't ever want to see anymore.
Unless you don't want me to ruin your reveal.
I feel so attacked right now.
Jesus, I think you should contact them and say that they don't have the right to use your image.
I think we're going to fucking war here, man.
And if they don't remove it, you'll find their offices and poo on their front doorstep.
Well, here's the real question, though, right? The real question is, this article was published in February of this year, but that picture of Tom is clearly like 10 years old or something.
Mm-hmm.
How did they find that picture?
I'm sure we've seen it used before, haven't we, Tom?
Yeah.
There was something else to do with hairstyle, men's hairstyles.
Yeah. I'm sure it was like on a hair website. Use for your hair products, those cheeky bastards. I have heavy hair, okay?
I've got a great idea. Why don't we invite this Brian E.
Yeah.
To be a guest on the podcast. And not telling him why, just saying, hey, we think you've got some great content around fashion mistakes. And then we like scroll to this post and then Tom jumps on. He's like, boom, bitch.
Don't use my images.
Yeah.
It's like a Mr. Beast.
I look so cross-eyed there. I don't know why. I don't, yeah.
Maybe we should do a denim head version of this article.
Yeah, 35 top
pictures of Brian E.
Yeah, exactly.
30 pictures of Tom.
I feel we should explain this to the anyone who's listening and not watching the recording. So we've gone through on, it's called avocadoposts.com, 35 fashion mistakes you need to make your man avoid. Oh, so it's telling women to stop your men. So you need to give this to your girlfriend, Tom. You making it.
Yeah, clearly they picked a picture that would be appealing to women. That's what it is.
You look so stoic.
Yeah. Number 12. This is excellent advice. Too much product is a problem for men when styling their hair. Too much gel or hairspray can cause hair to look hard and greasy. And we are sure this is not what you want. They sound very serious. The amount of product can be reduced to achieve a similar result. It is essential. So that bit's underlined. To choose the right product for each specific style. Some products are made for spiking hair, such as gel. Hairspray won't work for that. And underneath all of that is a lovely picture of Tom from, as we said, about a decade ago. So,
yeah.
Stealing his image.
Son of a stag days. I'm wearing Pharaoh's shirt and my Edwin Overworks jacket.
There we go.
And terrible glasses. Hate those glasses.
I feel like Lex is missing out on an opportunity to be a professional audiobook reader.
He's like my reading there. Anyway,
the one you reminded me of Adam Buxton.
Yeah, actually, yes. That's so Adam Buxton.
I guess
take a little jingle.
Blogged without going into a slight Adam Buxton voice. Oh, have my camera gone off?
Hold on. Yeah.
I'm hotspot.
That's because you were showing.
God. Oh. God, sorry, we're so unprofessional today. Yeah, anyway, so basically, nothing has happened in my life, but I found that article by accident a few weeks ago. So I've been sitting on it, waiting ever since.
You've been Googling Tom's face.
what's your question, David? What's your question? You're raising your hand.
Oh, I just realized the feature was there, so I was playing around with it. I think to celebrate Tom's hair, we need to all do a reaction with hearts every time Tom's speaking on camera to show our support. Okay. We love you, Tom. You too, Ilya.
Don't think you should. Because the lovely people at home won't be able to see them. Oh,
dude, everybody's on our YouTube, man. It's like our YouTube's blown up.
Love it.
We got like 2 subscribers.
I
no worries, Tom. I wish I had the problem of putting too much hair product onto my hair, mate.
You put so much that it's become a shell.
What an issue. It's slipstream, so I'm aerodynamic. No, it's because I've got heavy hair, and I put a normal amount of hair product in, which is pomade, which is one reason why I don't take the article seriously, because they don't even say it's pomade. But my hair is unruly. Every time I go to the barbers, they're like, oh, such thick hair. Oh, yes, so much hair. Thank you. I've noticed for the past 30 years. And I always love to take a picture of my hair when it's done. I'm probably on 200 barbers Facebook pages, so there is that.
And also the avocado post.
Yeah, you can suck it, avocado post 35 shit tips for women. Help them, man.
The real question though is, Lex, why are you donating to Avocado Post's Patreon?
That's a different one. Yeah, I've no idea how I found it. It's just one of them, you know, when you're bored killing time. And then Tom's Lex lovely face just popped up.
Lex is just sending links to my Instagram being like, look what this idiot's doing now.
He's like subscribing to their Substack and everything.
You can do a whole article about Tom's rubbish turnips.
Okay, David, future podcast topic, top 10 mistakes to avoid for a denim head.
I will put that on the chart.
We'll just go through their whole article and just every point with a better point.
Well, one of them would be use fewer hair products, apparently.
Yeah. No, it would be get a beard.
Yeah, go bald and grow a beard. That's tip number one.
Nice.
It lowers your center of gravity. You probably have better balance.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
I used to have a big afro, and I'd always kind of stumble walking down the street.
It does make you shorter, though. Might not get on all the big rides.
Did it make you top heavy, David?
Yeah. Especially when I was super gangly in my young age.
Especially at your height. Yeah.
Big gust of wind, I was fucked, man.
Okay.
Michael Jackson, Smooth Criminal.
Host, can you move us on?
Okay, moving on very quickly. I mean, is there any news? Anyone got any news?
I will share some news. I saw that Dawson Denim are doing wholesale, and they're doing a Made in Japan collection for their next season, which is quite interesting from their point of view. I'm guessing they're trying to scale up their business a little bit and freeing themselves up a little bit from, you know, making everything which they've been doing up to this point. So that's an interesting development, and I wish them luck with that.
That's a really interesting one, because I know for them, there's a big USP around the fact that it was made by them in their, you know, shop in Hove.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if the end customer of Dawson ever saw that as a unique selling point per se. Whereas someone like Ue Yofukuten, that's a big thing. It's oh my gosh, this is made by hand by two people. But I'm not sure. It's hard to know how much that was ever clearly a USP for Dawson. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, they do mention it quite a lot in their social media posts. There is this is made by us in our workshop in Brighton and Hove. So I definitely think that was definitely a USP for them, and I think a lot of people appreciated that. Now, do I think that's going to change people's perception of them? No, I don't think so, because people still want to support them, and they're not moving production to somewhere cheaper just to be able to make more. It's just trying to scale and still trying to keep the quality that they're known for.
Are they kind of selling as a different line as well as the current made in Brighton stuff, or is it?
I don't know whether there's going to be a clear line between the two. I wouldn't have thought so, but I mean, in their product description, they might say, you know, this is made in Japan versus this is made in Brighton. I don't know exactly how they're going to be doing it going forward. I would assume that they're going to do this collection so that their wholesale accounts can buy it. And then they will still offer their own product through their own website, which people can buy just as normal. So, yeah, the stuff that people will be buying that's not made by them will be through stockists. So, so then you can kind of.
It's almost like diffusion line fashion, right? It's like if you've got like the big fashion houses and like, I don't know, mainstream fashion, they've always got these like diffusion lines where it's like, oh, I can buy Valentino, or I can buy like Valentinito, or whatever like you call the diffusion version of Valentino, yeah. Or like by Miu Miu, or like Miu Miu Miu, whatever. It's interesting to kind of see how that's kind of become a thing. There's a few other brands that have done this too, where it's like,
can we go back to the fact you think Miu Miu's diffusion line is called Miu Miu Miu?
Oh, I just made that up. I don't know.
They just add an extra mu on the end.
I'm mostly just being sarcastic. I actually don't know what it is.
Shame, but I think it should be.
My
ex used to be really good at all these kind of like mainstream and diffusion lines, but I don't remember anymore. It's been too long.
sorry, carry on. Sorry for interrupting you. That just amused me.
Actually, it'd be called Mewtwo, like the Pokemon. How do I know that? But anyways, I'm trying to think who else has done this. I guess Edwin to a degree. We have like kind of the made in Japan line, made in not Japan line.
Well, sorry to interrupt, David, but I think Benzac did a made in Japan line while still doing their made in Europe line.
Bingo.
Yeah. I think that's quite but they did it kind of. They were never making their own stuff. It was always kind of, I think, made in Portugal was Benzac.
Yeah, I think.
And then they had their kind of premium line made in Japan. So you don't necessarily often see small makers like Dawson go and say and do something like this, which is quite an interesting, development. I think it'd be interesting to see whether more brands follow suit like that.
I've actually got a build on that I'd like to bring up now that I think about it. So I've obviously kind of become a bit of a fan in Yucatan over recent years, partly because you get a good shoe for the price. But also like, I'm trying to find it. I'm looking for an email on my phone while I speak. But anyways, so Yucatan, their kind of like main line, let's call it, is the hand-sewn moccasins. They're all made in Maine. They work with the same factory that's been making handmade moccasins for, I don't know, 50, 100 years, whatever. But as time progressed, they've begun doing some of their shoe production in Europe, I guess maybe like Portugal, and then some of their shoe production in Mexico. And like the Chimula brand, which is their kind of like less expensive brand, is all made in Mexico. And so like I've picked up a couple pairs of like the Yucatan hand sewn stuff that's made in Maine. And like that is like, those are some very substantial shoes, like really well made, really chunky. Like you can just like see all this like big fat stitching, and it's like picking up a pair of Vibergs or something of that ilk, where it's like, this is a substantial shoe. But I also picked up one of their pairs of Chukkas on eBay that are kind of like the Sanders Chukkas that you have, Ilya, like the ones that are sort of the Steve McQueen, the ones he made famous in the 60s. I forgot who those were, the originals were from, like Astroflex or something like that. But anyways, I've got these Yucatan Chukkas I bought on eBay, brand new, and they're made in Portugal. Well, number one, I had to size up to like, I think it's all their Made in Portugal stuff is sized in Euro sizing. So it's all in like metric, you know, like EU 42, 43, 44, whatever. And these shoes are like EU 46, which I think is US 12. And they're definitely the same size as like a US 11, not a 12. So I'm like, that's kind of a bit odd, but oh well, they fit. And then within like, I think the first day of wearing them or the second day of wearing them, the kind of welt is sort of like glued onto the upper because it's like a crepe sole. So it's not like actually a Goodyear welted shoe. And the welt kind of started to separate at the point where like your foot bends. So I sent him a picture and I'm like, hey, Yucatan, like I've had these for a day so far and they're already separating. Can I like send them back to you to fix them or give me a different pair? They're like, oh, wow. Looks like you're wearing your shoes well. I hope you enjoy them. Your local cobbler should be able to fix them.
Oh.
I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. I mean, because I bought them on eBay, I don't have much of a leg to stand on, but
yeah.
It just kind of made me think about the fact that like you could send part of your production elsewhere and do things in a cheaper way, but like that comes at a cost in some cases of like your product won't be as good or you won't be able to stand by it in the same way. And it kind of it decreases trust. Like I probably won't buy Yucatan anymore, even though their hand sewn stuff is great. Just because it's like, well, can I even trust this brand anymore? Knowing like they didn't look after this pair that kind of fell apart.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You've got to stand by your product, whether it's made in one place or another. That shouldn't really, you know, there shouldn't be any difference.
Yeah, I've been meaning to do a 5x1 review as well, where I like kind of show why. Yeah, here we go. Those shoes look like they're in great condition besides the sole separation, exclamation point. Hope you get to enjoy them still. It's difficult to say what exactly is going on. I don't feel confident telling you to grab some Gorilla Glue and glue it back together or something. For the best solution, I think you might want to take these to a reputable cobbler and get an in-person consultation. I'm sure they'll be able to fix the problem or offer you a solution of some kind. I forgot to ever reply to them, but it's basically like, you guys are basically telling me to fuck off.
It's funny, on the subject of shoes, in one of the Facebook groups, Rugged Boots or something like that, there's like a user who's been posting pictures from like a weird like Chinese kind of rip-off Alden Indie boot thing.
I know the one you mean.
I've just bought these amazing boots. They're really comfy and they're Goodyear welted and look exactly like an Alden Indie boot, but for a lot less. You guys should check out blah, blah, blah website. They're great. And just all the comments are just like, the reviews for this website say it's a scam and it's dodgy. All of the pictures are taken straight from the website. Like, moderators, get this down. It's crazy what people, the lengths they'll go to fucking shill some weird boots from China. That are also, they said they were Goodyear welted and they had a Blake stitch on the inside. So that was my first red flag. Not saying anything about.
Oh, I just found it. Yeah. Is it Dirk Jandengroot?
Yeah. And it's like, it's fake as fuck.
I bought these, a tribute to the indie boot, and I'm so impressed.
So impressed. He forgot to change his name when he copy and pasted it from the email, probably. yes. Shame. So soft. And it came up like 3 times. And he's like, oh, spoke to the mods on the group and they said it was fine to post the exact same thing again. Clearly not.
Man, I struggle so much with like Facebook groups and stuff. I swear, like, for every 9 posts where of someone showing something interesting or valuable, someone post something where you're just kind of like, what the fuck's the point? It's like, sell me on Iron Rangers. It's like, why are you posting this, buddy?
Read a review, like.
Yeah, it's like JFGI. Sell yourself.
No, my favorite is I joined the Levi's History and Appreciation Club or something like that Facebook group, and every single post is, hey, found these Levi's, can someone age them? Hey, how old are these Levi's? How much do you think these Levi's are worth?
In fairness,
I see being like, look, this was covered in another thread. Read the fucking posts in the group previously, and there will be your answer. Next post. Hey, how old are these Levi's?
And in fairness, though, in our local chat group, we sometimes get people saying, hey, I found this really cool vintage piece. What do you guys think it's worth? So, like, we are guilty of it, too.
But, like, most of the time, they're, like, early 2000s, like, mainline Levi's. They're going to be worth, like, a fiver tops on, like, Depop or something.
I got these silver tabs.
Yeah, it's people reading when they're having something like the Daily Mail or after you get jeans selling for like £120,000 or whatever they sold for at the Vintage Festivus. Oh, there's a new Vintage Festivus. That's some news that we could have mentioned.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. Vintage Festivus, please.
Go ahead.
So it's Durango Vintage Festivus. It's, what's the name of the guy who does it now? I can't remember. I would know, but I've just drunk a very strong beer, so.
Ethan?
The author of Jeans of the Old West?
It's not the author of Jeans of the Old West. No?
Is it the...
Oh, God, this is the worst podcast ever.
Not Idaho Jeans?
Yeah, that's the guy.
Hey, Idaho Jeans. I love his work.
Yeah, so I mean, we know his tag, but can't remember his name. Brett Eaton.
I said Brett Eaton.
I just said Brayton. Oh, we weren't. No one listens to you, Tom.
Prison
or host?
Your worst host ever. So last year in October, he did the Durango Vintage Festivus, where basically it was a vintage denim festival somewhere in America. And I think they sold a pair of jeans for about 100,000. Is that right? It's around that amount. And it was in all the newspapers. Oh, people paid £100,000 for a pair of jeans. Your jeans could be worth that much, which is why on your Facebook page, you get idiots who've read the Daily Mail and they go onto Facebook, Vintage Levi's, and they find that group and they post their circa 2000 shitty old made in China Levi's. Oh, how do you tell if this is worth £100,000? It's obviously not, you fucking moron. But anyway.
Yeah, one, the label. Two, all the Levi's labels have like dating codes on them. The dating code's always there. People just go, how old is this? Something. Yeah. Read the fucking label.
It's expired. Throw it out.
Yeah. Anyway, they've so there's a new Festivus. I don't know why it's called Festivus and not Festival. I've never quite understood that, but anyway.
It's Seinfeld. Festivus is from Seinfeld.
There we go.
Festivus is the holiday for the rest of us.
There we go. Oh, it makes some sense then. Yeah, so they've got a new vintage auction, and apparently they've got one of the oldest pairs of Levi's in existence for sale. I think it says the oldest, from pre-1873, it's on one of the auction sites. I can't remember which one now. And it is, the estimate is £150,000 to £350,000. So a lot of money.
That's like 200,000 to 400,000, 50.
Oh, so it might be dollars. Sorry, yeah, $150,000 to $400,000. Yeah, it's on Live Auctioneers. So if you look on liveauctioneers.com, so it's obviously a real life auction, but they're also doing a digital one through that website. And they've got that there and all the other stuff that they're selling. So some really interesting pieces. Sadly, nothing I can afford because I'm skint. There we go, some news.
Yeah, it's interesting because it says it's in Durango, but they're actually apparently running it in New Mexico instead.
Maybe I'm guessing the previous one was in Durango.
There's some for about $50 so far.
Well, the bids are at $50, but the estimates are, it's a few weeks off, and the estimates are quite far higher.
Why don't we all put our money together, buy the oldest pair of jeans?
I did see that, and I was like, that's about like getting off the price of my extension. Imagine if I spent, like, I told my girlfriend, they've knocked half our house down. I'm like, sorry, we can't afford the rest of the extension because I bought a pair of jeans.
So you're going to use that jean for jeans as fucking roofing.
Yeah, I'm like, but they're the oldest jeans ever. And she's like, yeah, but we haven't got half a fucking house. We haven't got a kitchen. I'm like, yeah,
but
oldest jeans ever.
How's hot take, I actually don't think I would want them.
Why
was just giving them to you?
I mean, if I didn't have to pay for them, sure. But like, to me, for some reason, a historical item like that doesn't hold value. I don't know why.
Why are you here? Talk about old jeans.
It's the patina. Like, I want to make my own. Like, for me, the appeal of all this rugged stuff is kind of breaking it in and fading it and wearing it myself. Not acquiring something that someone wore in a mine, you know, 175 years ago.
I'm going to use my executive powers as new folks. Kicking David out. Get out of here. I don't know if I'm
going to. No, it's weird. It's like, I like patina. I like hard wearing goods, but I like the act of breaking in and wearing a hard wearing good rather than, I don't know. It's just kind of like, I'm not really sure what I would do with a vintage piece like that. Like, hang it on the wall and be like, wow, it still kind of smells bad and it looks ugly, but it was cool because it was in a mine.
I mean, the thing is, whoever buys it will it'll probably get folded up and put into an archive somewhere. But yeah, you would. Yeah, if I had it, I would get it framed and put it on the wall. And everyone would come around the house and they'd be like, why have you got an old shitty old pair of jeans on your wall? And I'd be like, oh, let me tell you.
They're older than your great, great, great. Yeah.
But that doesn't immediately make them cool, right? So if you go to the Black Horse shop in Cold Drops, right, and they've got Ken's old jacket, like, that's cool because we know Ken's story. We know how he wore it from like a brand new jacket to tatters. We can have an interesting narrative around why that jacket is the way it is. But these kind of garments from the mines, you know, and during the gold rush, it's like, well, I mean, it's kind of interesting because it's that old, but.
Yeah, like, without those kind of precursors, you wouldn't have your jeans. Like, the evolutionary, like, those were the pioneers of design of jeans and workwear and everything. You know, it's those little details that the Japanese.
We wouldn't be sitting here talking about this chat.
Yeah, but I'm happy for that stuff to live in history books or like reference books, right? It's like, to me, it wouldn't hold monetary value to own that.
This would be a Warhammer podcast, and I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. Wait, are we changing this to a Warhammer podcast? This is the Sons of Paint.
Dave and I would possibly be still hanging out as Sons of Lycra. We'd talk about our cycling Lycra instead. Yeah, I don't know. It's a historic item. Like, it's. I think it. Like, I wouldn't pay that much for it. I can't. If I were to win a lottery, it has to be a big lottery win, not just like a $500,000 win. Like, a, you know, if I were to win $10 million on the lottery,
yeah,
I would bid for that pair of jeans 100%. Like, it's like, most people would go out and buy a stupid sports car. I would just buy a really old pair of jeans and I'd get them framed, and I don't know where they'd live because my girlfriend still wouldn't let them in the house. And it's like a piece of history. And as you said, like, we're all here chatting as a bunch of guys who met purely because we like jeans.
Yes, but for me, interestingly, I like the act of breaking in and wearing and fading and like putting my own story into a garment.
Maybe so did the miner.
Well, yeah, so for him, they might have monetary value. Or if, like, if we had the story that it was like some famous miner who blew up a bunch of shit and, like, you know, kind of like an interesting narrative behind it, I think it would also be interesting. But I guess it's like, just the fact that it's a very old pair is like interesting from a reference standpoint. It's like, I'd like to have that in reference book so I can have that factoid if I need it. But I guess for me, I don't it's hard for me to put a dollar
sign. Don't you find the interesting point about it is that it's like the one of the evolutionary steps of how genes developed. It's like finding a missing piece, maybe, of, you know.
Yeah, and let's say you fade up your rogue territory Stantons or something like that. How many rogue territory Stantons did they make? Tens of thousands of units, hundreds of thousands of units. You can still find them everywhere. You know, you don't have to go searching in the mine for them. There is that one piece. That's the only example left in the world. And they may have only made 100 of them at the time.
Yeah, I think that's where I see things differently, in that for me, a mass produced garment, a modern day one, or an easily accessible garment, modern day, where I've been able to put like an awesome patina in it and kind of tell my narrative through it, that holds value because it's got sentimentality to it, right? It's like, oh yeah, these are the jeans where I passed out drunk and slept in an alleyway behind a dumpster. Or like, these are the jeans where I went skydiving. I don't know.
Have you ever actually slept behind a dumpster?
I actually have.
Oh, have you got the jeans?
States.
I think that was pre-raw denim.
He was naked.
No, I think I was probably still wearing like diesel jeans or something like that back then. But this did happen. So, but yeah, it's like it's got value because it's got relativity to my life. Whereas something historical, I see its significance. I just don't see the value in it for me. Like, I wouldn't pay money for it, but I would love to have it in a jean museum. So I could go and like look at it and say, wow, this is cool.
Boo. Should we do some Q&A on that shocking revelation?
Well, this is no surprise. I've always kind of called myself a denim futurist.
There'd be no future without the past. Want to pick a question?
From?
From the Trello. For everyone. Has no one got Trello up?
Ooh.
No. Okay. And I just picked this for the tag, just because I like it. At @swingjoint_memes. Hello. Contemplating leaving a pair of jeans outside next summer for some sun fades. Wasn't really a question. No question mark. But what do people think about doing a sun fade project?
Bad idea.
Yeah.
Because unless you're able to like magically rotate the jeans every day at the halfway point, you're inevitably going to end up with a different sun distribution on the front of the jeans and on the back of the jeans. So it won't be fade uniformly and it won't look good.
It also takes ages because I hung like a replica denim banner, which I can show you, in the window of my studio. So it's not an old one. It's just like a replica one. I've been kind of using it as a like a homemade curtain. And I've had it all summer. It's south facing window and it's not faded at all. It just stays the same.
I think it will take a while for denim to fade from sunshine.
So yeah, you'd have to leave it out there, basically outside in the sun for a couple of summers kind of thing. It seems like a lot of effort just to,
unless you're living in like a desert somewhere. Not really feasible, especially for UK weather.
Still, what's the benefit of the desert fades?
It's that very kind of
sun fades,
super bleached out kind of look that you see on like, you know, vintage jeans where it's been hanging in, you know, someone's shed window or sitting on, you know, a shelf in a store for, you know, 60, 70 years, and you get them with like, you know, where they've been faded, folded up in a shop, sitting on a top shelf or something. So it can be interesting, but it'd have to be so long term in the UK. I'm wondering if someone could like develop a type of indigo that like fades a lot quicker in the sun. That would be quite cool.
Is that not just like achievable just by washing the garment more?
Maybe, but yeah.
It gives a slightly different fade, I think, because if you have something in the sun for a really long time, it fades.
Yeah,
it's kind of
like differently as well.
But as I said, I think you need to leave it in a shop window for decades, kind of, for it to work. But I tell you what, I'll keep you posted. So as I said, I've had that banner in the window for one summer. I'll show you again. So it's been hanging there for one summer, and it's not faded in the slightest. So if it's,
I don't know. Nice. Okay, next question. Going quick fire. Pow, pow, pow. Duke.Bradford.75. My first question, are you a Duke? Are you from Bradford? And are you 75?
Maybe he's born in 75.
Best brick and mortar stores to actually try on items before purchase. Should we give like one example each?
I presume we're all going to give places in London because.
Well, I was going to say one per country.
I mean, I don't really know anywhere other than London, so. Do we know where Duke lives?
Oldest Bradford.
Your name kind of gives it away.
On a royal estate, obviously.
Calculated, yes. Yeah, royal estate. The recommendations that we give, who will send them answer them? I mean, it's tough. I would say American Classics probably has quite a good regular stock of like regular items, and like maybe like the Red Wing store. Like if you go American Classics, like they always have like sugar cane, things like that. I feel like stores like Clutch Cafe, there's a lot of like stuff coming in and out, or they'll get like a single run of, you know, a Gelato shirt, and then that shirt's just gone forever. So you see it on the website, then it's like, oh yeah, we've got one left in an extra small. So it can be quite tough with shops like that yes have a lot of brands. I'd say American Classics for London.
Maybe that's actually the simple answer, to say book a trip to London and across American Classics, Clutch, Rivet and Hyde, Son of a Stag, you're never really going to be able to try on a ton of different shit that you might struggle to find in any other city, even like cities like New York or other big ones, just
Why limit yourself? Just have an open mind. Try on everything and anything that takes your fancy. But also do research. Anyone else? Any thoughts?
Got some good American recommendations. Obviously, SF, you want to hit up Self Edge or LA or New York, or those are good options as well. Blue and Green's got their New York City location, and they've just opened up one in Denver, Colorado, interestingly. In Austin, Stag's got really good denim choice. And then maybe those are the immediate ones that come to mind. There are others, but I'm kind of brain farting.
All right, Tom, next question. We've done that one.
Smashed it. At Chatter and Notes, who makes the best braces? Does anyone wear braces here?
I did it as a teenager, but my teeth are straight now.
Hey. I had to wear them with my dress uniform in the army.
In the army.
I've still got them somewhere. That's pretty much as close as I ever got to.
I like Orgyle by Studio Artisan. They do some very nice looking braces. I've always liked the look of. But I knew I forget their name. Is that my first swear? Is it? I don't know. Simon James Cathcart. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, they've also got some good kind of Art Deco-y ones, but haven't tried a wide variety of braces to say whether or not what's good. Should we do one more question?
Yes, let's do one more question.
The other ones are long words, or long discussion topics.
Long words. Big words.
Tom, no, like big word. Like Kevin in the office. E big word. Save time. Big impression. At I Love Egg and Chips, is military repro worth it? Can and similar be purchased for a lot less?
I noticed he mentions a couple of brands as well.
Yeah, I did shorten it down a bit.
I'd say really the only way you're gonna get it for cheaper really is vintage, potentially, but half the time that's more expensive, or if it is cheaper, it's sizes that no one actually fits in. I mean, there's like World War II reenactment firms and stuff that can do things. I'd say Buzz is probably the best price point for repro. RM's at Real McCoy's, some of their stuff is stupidly overpriced. Like, I think Ilya pointed out, is it a year or so ago, they were showing off some fleece, and it was the same fleece that the US Army was issued in like the early 2000s. And you can pick them up, the actual issued bit of kit, secondhand, for like $100. And if you're looking good enough, you probably get it for about 50. And then there's RMC turn up and sign it for 750 quid. And you're like, this is a cheap, mass-produced fleece designed to keep people warm in cold environments. It does not need to be overly engineered by RMC.
No, and it's not like a luxury item either, so...
No.
Yeah, it's not like you're paying something like for, you know, for leather or cashmere or, you know, these fine kind of materials. No, it's like, you know, pile fleece. Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah, or some might argue
taking the piss
in a particular way on old machines that isn't made nowadays like that. So they've done the risk. Yeah.
So from my experience, I think what's worth paying for is the fabric, which the repro brands will work to recreate. So a good HBT, you know, is just like the same as good denim, which is milled. And you can find, like, if you go to a surplus store where they have, you know, some of the stuff which has been made recently, you can tell the difference just purely because of the fabrics. They're like thin, they're cheap. You can see like the quality is not there. And also the way the garments are constructed is just, you know, it's very basic, very simple. I would, if you're going to go for either, if you can go vintage, if that fits and works for you, that's probably, you know, a great thing. But if you're someone like me who's like 6'2", it's hard to find a lot of the pieces that will fit me. So I think repro is a great way, you know, to go for those kind of things. And sometimes you might buy a repro piece, and then later on you might stumble upon something vintage, so you can then, you know, decide, actually I prefer the vintage one or the repro. But yeah, I think there's like, is it the World War II Impressions?
Mm-hmm. That's the one I was on about. Yeah.
Is that the one? Yeah. So some of their stuff, I think I've seen a mix. Some of it's quite good, some of it's not that great. So I just don't think they necessarily, I think what they try to do is a very basic repro of that item, which is fine as well, because sometimes you know it's just a simple shirt or something like that, and you know, you might be happy with just having that. For me, it's worth buying something like a repro, which is well made and has a nice fabric. I think it's good, especially when you wear it in and you can kind of see how it develops over time and how it stands up to the test of time. I think that's, you know, worth it. And I agree with Andy that like someone like Buzz Rickson probably offer the best price to quality ratio that you can get.
I'd love to see someone do an inflation report, or I'm not sure the right term, maybe an inflation report is the right kind of closest thing to it, where it's like, these garments cost X when they came out as original military issue. And given the cost of inflation increase over time and cost of living increase, today they should cost Y. and then compare that against what these Japanese repro brands are charging Z. And I'm guessing it would be fascinating to see like what this stuff should cost today at the exact same mil spec it was built at back in like, you know, World War II, Vietnam War, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, but that'd be the same with like tool watches as well, like Rolexes and that, because they were, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, they were used by people for functional purposes. And whereas some people still do use that now. I mean, you know, they were buying Rolexes then for like $100. And if you looked at the inflation, looking at that now, they would not be worth, you know, what they're selling for now, like $9.6K for, you know, kind of like an Oyster. And then if you're looking for a Submariner, you're looking at like probably like 15 to 20K.
Yeah.
You know, because the way the market has changed, and also the fact that a lot of inflation never matches wage growth ever. And then firms just bump up price because it's exclusivity and it gets them a specific market.
But I think another interesting point, I think going back to like Bosrixons and Real McCoys, I think also someone like Real McCoys, I think from everything that I've read, is that they're probably a little bit more obsessive in getting things absolutely correct to the thread, to the fabric, a little bit more so than maybe Bosrixon would be. And the thing is, if you're looking for something as authentic as possible, maybe for you it's worth paying that extra, you know, 150 or whatever difference between the two items will be to pay for it, you know. I think whereas Bosrixon / you know, Toyo Enterprise, they're probably looking at something, well, you know, we're happy to make it like, you know, maybe 80% as close to the original, but we're not going to obsess over it as much, so they can, you know. And also there's kind of a scale thing, I think, because Toyo are making so many more things, they can probably say, you know, this doesn't have to be as expensive as something like Real McCoys will do. And also I think McCoys have a lot of their own production facilities versus I don't know exactly how Toyo operate, but I think they might use different places.
Yeah, and I feel like McCoys is like the luxury version, or like the rose-tinted goggles version. Like, you know, if you look at an N1 jacket, they wouldn't have made N1 jackets with nice, soft alpaca linings. You know, it would be whatever fucking wool they could get their hands into, you know, and like Bosrixon will recreate it to that kind of standard issue level, like very nice and, you know, very good quality. And obviously they're, you know, doing quality control instead. But yeah, I feel like Real McCoys is the luxury version.
I think a lot of the times it does feel like that. Yeah.
I wonder if Real McCoys then should not be called Repro, and it should actually be called like Repro Luxury or Repro Upgraded, something like that, right? Because like Repro would imply that you're making it the same as it was originally.
Yeah.
But they would say they are. They would say they are, and I think a lot of enthusiasts will say that, you know, they're a lot closer to the authentic garments than anybody else will be, you know.
Then, from how many of those people were alive in 1945?
No, but when when to comparing it to vintage garments, that's the, you know, basing on.
Yeah, but then like a vintage garment's been worn for, you know, however many years, or, you know, stuffed away in a locker. And yeah, no, I feel like the kind of Real McCoys fanboys are just fanboys, and they'll just love anything that Real McCoys put out, while, like, you know, they're probably like, oh, Real McCoys are the best. Well, Freewheelers are a hell of a lot better than Real McCoys, and for comparable prices in terms
but of Real McCoys and Freewheelers are different in the
styles that they go for, like.
Yeah, I mean, Freewheelers don't really repro stuff in terms of the military stuff. They repro stuff in the denim. But in terms of the military stuff, a lot of it's kind of reimagined of things that could have been. And there are certain items which they do repro, but I think they've moved towards more like what could have been, or So it's slightly different. It's slightly different, I would say, with that.
Yeah. I mean, if you can afford Real McCoys, then fucking go for it. Stop you.
Well, I mean, if you can afford the Real McCoys, you can afford the freewheelers.
Knitted overalls, Koji's night.
Okay. All you gotta do is keep an eye on Grailed long enough, and you'll find all this good stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Shall we call it there then?
Go on, Tom. Wrap up for us.
In conclusion. Avocado 35, they can go fuck themselves.
future guest.
Yeah, future guest. It'll be a 5-minute interview. It's just me going, fuck you.
I'm not bitter.
I wonder if they sell merch.
Yeah, we'll all come
don't
on
face.
but thank you for those that are listening on our inaugural 30th. Podcast. Is that an anniversary? Do we need to like do anything? Is it like silver or something? Don't know.
Yeah, like we should definitely have like a pint or something to celebrate. That seems thematic.
The alcohol celebration. But
it's
it's
the pearl anniversary if we're going off weddings.
It's the pearl anniversary.
Pearl.
I think we should apologise for being more unprofessional than usual in this episode.
No, I thought we'd done a really good job.
This might actually be our top-rated episode, for all we know.
More than likely.
Yeah. Our most complained about episode.